Hello and welcome to episode 25 of the Help Side Basketball Coaching and Analytics Podcast. My name is John Jansen. I'm the head men's basketball coach here at La Sierra University, located in Riverside, California. And here we are on the eve of the beginning of the end of the NBA season. It starts tomorrow night, and it really does. I know everyone's joking about it on TV and in the media, but it really does seem like the NBA season just ended. I was, you know, going blow by blow with the Lakers as they were able to take down the Heat and win the championship, and already here we are. So today we are going to do our basketball roundup, where we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in the NBA, what's going on in college basketball. And then after that, instead of having an analytics section and a strategy session, we're just going to combine them into one. When I started this podcast, I told myself if I ever made it to 25 episodes, I would do an episode on threes versus fouling up three or not. And I can't believe we made it. I can't believe I made it. But here we are, episode 25. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. And it's kind of an analytics discussion and a strategy discussion. So I think it, you know, combining it all into one deep dive is kind of addressing both things here. So that's kind of what we're going to talk about today. Before we get into that, the website is active. It isn't updating very often, but it is thehelpside.com. And I actually did start a YouTube channel called The Help Side. And it's going to be a little different than this content, first of all. I did record one podcast on there, the last one, and then I thought that wasn't that interesting. So I'm not going to do that anymore. But the best thing about it is I'm going to break down different plays from college basketball, NBA basketball, whatever. And it's a good opportunity to kind of see what I see. And so what I'll do is I'll go through a play and kind of pause it and rewind it and talk about positioning and strategy and what's going on and what could be done better and where guys could be and all that kind of stuff. And of course, all of this is my opinion. If you disagree with me on those YouTube videos, write something in the chat, email me, whatever. We can have a conversation about it. I don't think I'm right about everything. I just have my opinions and the way I see basketball. And so I love hearing other perspectives. And that's part of the fun of doing this podcast. I get to learn so much. You know, when I'm researching things, it's really fun. I feel like I'm getting smarter and better by doing all this research and stuff like that. So it's a good tool there on YouTube for breaking down plays and kind of looking at the strategy part of that. And I would love to hear your guys' input on my breakdowns. And there's going to be more. There's only a few up there now because I just started it. And I'll keep adding to that thing as we go along. And that is at the Help Side channel on YouTube. So I want to start today with my basketball roundup. And I want to start with the NBA, which of course starts tomorrow. And look, it's the Christmas season. It's the holiday season. It's marquee games early on. And that's why the NBA started it now, is because they wanted to attract these fans. As football is kind of getting phased out, they want to get fans' appetites ready for the NBA season, because yes, there's still two more weeks of the NFL, but after that it's just a game here and a game there and stuff like that. So the NBA kind of takes hold here without really any other sports going on except for a few college basketball games. So they really want it to kind of capture the Christmas season and get people excited about basketball, because if you think about the NBA, you always think about those great NBA matchups on Christmas Day. And so they don't want to change those routines and those patterns where we're all looking forward to these great matchups on Christmas Day. So I think that's why they started it when they did, instead of pushing it back a little further. I'm definitely worried about the COVID situation when it comes to the NBA. Now, just like with college basketball, I'm not really worried about, I mean, I'm worried about the health of the players, but I'm not worried in the way you're thinking. I'm worried that these games will keep getting postponed, just like you see in the college level, and they just won't be able to play enough games because this person will get it or this staff member will get it, you know, because they're doing all this traveling. You know, you see these college games getting canceled. Well, they're not traveling that much. I mean, NBA games are every other night, every night, you know, city to city, airports, all over the place. These college games, you know, it's really only the big schools that are traveling everywhere. And that's not and still these games are getting canceled. You know, these smaller schools, like, we were supposed to stay in state and as local as possible, and our you know, games still get canceled. So when they're traveling all over the country, and I heard some NBA stadiums are going to allow fans, I mean, you're just asking for massive outbreaks, and I think that a lot more games are going to get canceled than they think at this point. So I hope they are ready for that. I'm sure they are, but they might need, you know, a week or two at the end of the season for makeup games or something like that. So it's definitely a concern, but for me, the biggest concern is, you know, this short layoff for guys like LeBron, the older guys. And I know for the teams that didn't make the playoffs, it's a way longer layoff. And for the teams that got out early, it's probably a normal layoff. But, you know, LeBron's older, and he's the focal, you know, he's the centerpiece of pretty much the NBA still. He's still the face of the league, and I'm just worried about him getting hurt with this shorter layoff. And I hope the Lakers really manage his minutes, knowing that with their roster, you know, they can maybe win without him, with him playing less minutes, or even they may not need the number one seed to be able to make it to the NBA Finals. But let's just jump into the NBA, and I just want to talk about a couple teams here. And the first one, of course, is the Lakers. As a Laker fan, I am so excited about what the Lakers did in free agency. I don't know how they did it, but picking up Schroeder, Gasol, Harrell, and Wes Matthews, I mean, if you put an average three-man with those four guys, that five-man roster is probably a 30 to 35 win team right there. Just by themselves. And you're talking about those guys just being additions to a championship team. And I know, of course, they lost a few guys, but really no one that you can say was, like, irreplaceable. You know, they kept their nucleus. They just re-signed Kuzma, or they extended Kuzma 3 more years, and they just filled in where they lost guys. And I'm really excited about these players, because you see Schroeder, who's a point guard who can take some pressure off LeBron, bringing the ball up like Rondo did last year. You have Gasol, who's a pass-first big, who I think should fit in just fantastic with this roster. And then Montrezl Harrell is probably the most underrated player in the NBA. I mean, he got drafted by Houston, and I thought they gave up on him too early. I remember when he was at Louisville, he worked so hard, and I was like, this guy is going to be nasty in the NBA. And it didn't happen overnight. But now he is just such a great player. He's a glue guy. He's a hard worker. And I'm just so excited the Lakers have him. And then Wes Matthews is just a really nice, really nice role player. I mean, that guy would start on a lot of teams. So it's just great. I think the Lakers have got to be the huge favorites. And I'm just really excited to see them play together. And I'm the only thing I'm worried about is, you know, again, just like last year and every year, an injury to LeBron, more so than an injury to Anthony Davis this year, just because Anthony Davis is younger and you know, he should, in theory, unless it's like a really bad injury, come back quicker. You know, if LeBron that year, he pulled his groin, was basically out for the rest of the year. So that's my only concern with the Lakers, is their health. But I think if they stay healthy, it's their championship to lose this year, which is awesome. The next team I want to talk about is the Clippers. And, you know, as good as the Lakers did, the Clippers really didn't do anything. I mean, they picked up Serge Ibaka, who was just, I don't know, useless, I guess, is probably too drastic of a word. But, you know, he was really good on OKC. And then one day he discovered the three-point line, and he hasn't stepped in the paint since. And he's become so ineffective. And all he does is shoot threes now. He used to score around the basket. He used to be an elite defender. And now he wants to be a perimeter player. And it's really hurt his career. And to me, there's almost no value in him anymore. And the thing is, in the NBA level, you can't tell a guy he can't do anything, because they're all pros and they all make more than the coach. So they let you do whatever they want. They probably try to steer you in the right direction, but they don't tell you no. And if you want to shoot yourself right out of the NBA, like other players have done, they let you, because it's your life and it's your money, and that's the way it works. And a guy like him hasn't done that, obviously, but it's mostly because he's 6'11", 7 foot, and, you know, he defends and rebounds a little bit. So I don't think it was a great pickup. And then they got Nicholas Batum, who I didn't even know was still in the NBA. And I don't see how he's going to be. I mean, look, he's nice. He's a long defender. But I don't know what he has left. as far as being a significant contributor. And then, of course, you know, for the Lakers to get Harrell, the Clippers lose Harrell, who was just fantastic for them. So I think the Clippers significantly dropped, whereas the Lakers significantly got better. And if they were even, or if the Lakers were maybe a hair better, then that separation to me could be the difference. You know, could it be a pretty big difference in who moves further in the playoffs. Next team I want to talk about is the Warriors. Obviously, we know Klay is out for the year, which is really sad for him because, I mean, he is an elite shooter and elite scorer. And Golden State has been sitting around waiting. Last year, it was so strange because they just decided that partly they were going to tank, but partly that the season was just a pass. You know, they just said, you know what, we don't really care. And then they get this draft pick, and now it's like, okay, now we're coming again. And then they get this news with Klay, and it's very sad for them. I think with Klay, they were a significant contender because, yes, it was 4 or 5 years ago, but they were, with those main three nucleus, a championship-caliber team, a championship team. Now, I thought their bench was deeper, and even their other guys were really good. But now, without Klay, I think it's going to be more of a struggle than they think. Look, Steph is Steph. He's a great player. Draymond is a very good player, a very good role player. Andrew Wiggins is a very good player. And who knows what Wiseman's going to be? I mean, he's coming out of college. And, I mean, how many guys come out of college and are, you know, elite early in their career? Not a lot. I mean, a few here and there. But is he going to be that guy? I don't know. But then when you look at the rest of their roster, you don't see a whole lot. You know, they have Looney coming back, and they have some guys, but, you know, the thing about the Warriors before was it was a pick your poison. You know, if you want to help off Steph, then he passes to Klay or Durant or, you know, Barbosa or Livingston, these other really, really, or Iguodala. You have these really good players, and now he's going to be kicking out to Kelly Oubre or Kent Bazemore or, you know, whoever else they got out there. And I think that's the easier poison to pick. You know, you guard and you help on Steph and you take your chances with these other guys beating you. And obviously that's either easier said than done, but teams that win championships usually have a big two or a big three. And I don't know if the Warriors have that at this point as presently constructed. And I think they're probably 4 seed, maybe. I think that would be good for them. Maybe higher, but I think it's going to be harder once teams figure out that it's going to be all Steph. I think Steph's going to come out. I mean, he might lead the league in scoring this year because he's going to have to come out and do so much more because they're missing the scoring from Klay. And, you know, the rest of the guys on their team are not elite scorers, and they're guys that you can take away if you want to. So I think Steph would be interesting as a guy who might lead the league in scoring, but I think this is going to be a struggle for them as far as a team as with championship aspirations. The last thing I want to talk about is Milwaukee Bucks, and obviously they re-signed Giannis Antetokounmpo, and it's funny because everyone was predicting he goes here or there, and he never made comments about that. He never said, I'm going to weigh my options. Usually when a guy says, I'm not thinking about that yet, or I'm going to weigh my options, that means he doesn't want to say he's staying because he's not. And you can't say that while you're still a member and you're getting paid by that team. So he just kept his mouth shut and then he re-signed. And that's great. The problem for Milwaukee is, you know, who they got around him. And they have some nice players, but they traded for Jrue Holiday, but they got rid of Eric Bledsoe. And so the difference between Jrue Holiday as – look, Jrue Holiday is a really good player. He's a really good defender. He's a nice scorer. And I'm not sure how good Eric Bledsoe's defense was, but Eric Bledsoe was a 16, 17-point-a-game scorer. And you're talking about Jrue Holiday, who's like a 20 or 21-point-a-game scorer on a really bad team. So when you put him on a good team, he's probably a 16 or 17-point scorer. So I don't know how big of a jump that was. Maybe it will be better defensively, but the problem they had last year was scoring. They couldn't score. And other than that, I don't see any other pieces that they got that will make them better than they were last year. And look, they were really good last year. They were the number one seed, but when they got up against Miami, they couldn't score the ball. And, you know, when you go against elite coaches who have days and days to prepare, and Giannis hasn't shown the ability to knock down that perimeter shot, and you kind of suck in a little bit on him and throw two guys at him when he puts the ball on the ground, and then you make other guys beat you. And they weren't able to do that last year. And when you have a top scoring team like Miami, who does just enough on defense but can score the ball offensively, then you get a situation like Miami had last year, or excuse me, where Milwaukee had last year, where they just couldn't score enough points to beat Miami, and they're out in the second round. And I don't know if that's going to be the case this year, but I don't see how they're better. Now, maybe they got a little better. Maybe their younger guys got a little better. I mean, they've got a lot of younger guys that came out of college, but Lopez is older, Middleton's older, Giannis is older, Kyle Korver's older, and those are some of their core pieces. So I don't know how they make that leap and get to the NBA Finals with this roster. Now, I don't have a pick right now for who would take their spot, because I definitely don't think it's going to be Miami as presently constructed. I thought they were very fortunate. I feel like they got hot. And I don't think they can make that run again. Now, when I think about it, I'm not a big Doc Rivers guy, so I don't know if Philly's the right choice. I don't know if Boston has what it takes to get over the hump, especially losing Gordon Hayward. So now they're losing one of their role players from off the bench. So I'm not sure who comes out of the East at this point, but it seems to me like it's more wide open. So even though Giannis resigned, I still don't think they're the clear-cut East champion favorites. So I want to move now to college basketball and talk about the situation we had and the situations going on around college basketball. Look, there's 10 games, you know, 5 games, 3 games, 12 games canceled every day. And we went through it. We were getting tested a lot, and it's fine. It's not invasive. It doesn't hurt. It's not the thing that we all saw at the beginning of COVID testing where they're sticking the thing way up your nose. You just put it inside your nose and swirled around. And then we also had a spit test we were doing. And so we were getting tested a lot, and we were all negative the entire time from October 5th through when we ended. And we still had 2 games canceled, and our higher ups at our school, who are not part of the athletics program, they were in California here, and California went into a lockdown, and they decided that they were going to cancel our 2 games as the COVID numbers rose. And it was disappointing for us. We did get to play 2 games, but it was disappointing for the players. It was disappointing, you know, for me having to call the other coaches and apologize, you know, because they're getting ready for games. They're spending money on COVID tests. They're preparing for us. And, you know, we didn't get to play 2 of those games. And that's just the way it is right now. But I don't know, you know, with this NBA, as I mentioned, and with this college, I just don't know how it's going to work, because I don't think the numbers are going to go down at this point. You know, obviously we have this vaccine that just came out, but I'm saying right now, assuming we're not getting vaccines at this point, with the holiday season here, I think the numbers are going to go up, because I don't know anybody who isn't seeing family on Christmas, who's saying, I'm going to stay at home, we'll Zoom. And I'm sure there's a lot of people, but most of those people aren't young people. Young people don't care, because the numbers where they actually get sick or die is really, really low. But that's not the point. The point is that we have to be super careful, and I'm saying we as in college basketball. And so if one person gets it or tests positive, or a staff member or a trainer or whoever test positive, well, it shuts your whole program down, and it could potentially shut it down for 2 weeks, depending on, you know, tests, positive tests and negative tests after the original one. So it's really a tough situation, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how it works. You know, it happened a little bit with baseball, where the Marlins had some positive tests, and then I think their opponents had some positive tests, and so they missed a bunch of games. Well, in these conference seasons at the college level that aren't super long, well, what are you going to do if, you know, a team has a positive player and has to miss 2 weeks? Well, that's potentially four of your 15 or 20 conference games, you know, and in some of smaller conferences, you might only have 16, 15 conference games in the whole conference season, and to lose two or four of them because you play twice a week is a significant amount. And then if an opponent has one too, you could miss those games, and that's not even your fault. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I want to keep playing, of course. You know, our school doesn't really have scholarship money, so my players are paying to go to college, and of course, most of the reason, like it or not, that they're there is to play basketball, and so I want them to be able to play as many games as possible, and so we really want it to get going, but it's just a very fragile situation, you know, because it's not only if someone tests positive, it's still how the society is doing in general, because they can shut you down for any reason. So, and then on top of it, I'm very proud of our guys that we had no positive tests, but why did we have no positive tests? And I think more than anything, we probably just got lucky. I had players go get their hair cut at barbershops. I don't know if they're wearing masks. They went to the mall to get food. I hope they're wearing masks. And I had one player who I had to drive somewhere, and he told me in the car that he has multiple girlfriends. And whatever, that's fine. I don't care about any of that. But the fact is that, you know, let's say he has two and he lives with a couple of his teammates. Well, girlfriend one comes over and then goes home to her family, her roommate, her friends, her small bubble, hopefully, sees her family on Christmas. Girlfriend two comes over another night or whatever they do, or they go hang out. And then she goes home and she goes see her friends and her family and her roommates and whatever the case may be. And so you're just multiplying the odds against us. And I think we just got lucky because I'm sure everybody's like that. I'm sure across the country it's like that, you know? I mean, these are young people, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, you know, up through 25. And they don't believe that even if they get it, it's going to affect them. So they want to live. They don't see the long term. They see the right now. And the right now is going here, doing this, seeing this person, etc. And, you know, with this Christmas season coming up, like I said, I don't know anyone who is young and saying, no, I'm not seeing anybody, you know? Some people will because they're going to say, oh, yeah, my parents are at risk. My grandparents are at risk, whatever, so I'm not going to see them. But friends are going to see friends, you know? Kids are going to see their parents because you look and you say, well, I feel fine, and they say, well, I feel fine. And so everybody sees each other because we're not the ones that have it. It's everybody else. Everybody says it's everybody else who has it, not themselves. So again, I know this is a long rant about COVID again, but I'm worried about the state of sports until this vaccine becomes more widespread and we can all get it and we can all play without having to worry about it. So let's now switch gears and get into the heart of what we're going to talk about here. And before we talk about the fouling up three situation, if you go back to episode 13 of this very podcast, I talked about this wild and crazy idea of fouling while up two. And I'm being a little facetious when I say wild and crazy, because I did a lot of thinking about it and I thought it was a pretty good strategy. And then I told a buddy of mine about it who's a computer guy, and he put it on Reddit and everybody bashed it and said it doesn't work, and you know, you lose percentage points of victory and whatnot. And then I'm researching for this podcast today, and here we are, and Ken Pomeroy, again, if you haven't been to kenpom.com, then you are missing out on just great analytical information. And you know, I don't know this guy, I just go to his site occasionally and learn stuff if I can. And he talked about the guide to fouling when leading, and this came out this year, and he referenced a game that happened early this year between San Francisco and BYU. And San Francisco was up two, and they were a big underdog. Well, I don't know how big, but they were an underdog in this game, and they decided to foul up by two. And they fouled a 56% free throw shooter, and I'll just read you this paragraph that he wrote, and it kind of goes into why they did it, and it's kind of what I was thinking and what to me makes a lot of sense. So he said, USF, San Francisco, used this equation to their advantage against BYU. By fouling a poor free throw shooter when up two, they reduced their chances of losing in regulation. And that was a serious threat given that BYU had one of the best offenses in the country built on great three-point shooting. The Cougars were also 14 for 26 on threes to that point in the game. So, you're taking away their ability to beat you in regulation by fouling because they can't hit that three. Yes, maybe they can get an offensive rebound, but that's a very small percentage of the time. And you're fouling a 56%, did I say? It doesn't really matter. A 50-something percent free throw shooter who's only going to make both probably 28 or 29% of the time. So if he misses one and you get the rebound, you win. If he misses both and you get the rebound, you win. And if he makes both somehow, you still get the last possession with a chance to win the game. So he said, when you read this article, it's on the blog here on kenpom.com, and he said it raises your percentage of winning by about 3%. And that might not seem like a lot, but up two with under a possession to go, you're already a pretty big, you know, the probability of you winning is already very high. So raising it 3% is really, really good. So you can listen to episode 13 if you want to hear more about that. You can go to Ken Palm and read this blog that he wrote. And it'd be cool if they said that they saw my thing on, or my buddies wrote about what I thought about on Reddit, and that's how they came up with it. I doubt it, but it's a possibility. So I'm going to now go into this fouling by up three situation, to foul or not to foul while you're up three. And when this first came out years ago, I mean, probably 10 years ago, and people started debating it, they probably were debating it forever. But when I started getting serious into coaching and started thinking about it, I was always on the no foul side because I'm a defensive coach. And I said, we're not going to let them hit a three. That's just the way it's going to be. And as more and more information has come out, I definitely swung the other direction. And doing research for this podcast, it seems like it's pretty even as far as the percentages. And a lot of the information I read says that at the NBA level, you should do it. And at the college level, maybe you should not. And I think that's probably because at the NBA level, they probably shoot a higher free throw percentage, meaning that you have these guys like Steph Curry and stuff that are automatic and they just go up there. And so you can just foul and foul and foul. And as long as Steph doesn't miss a free throw, you can't lose. But let's get into it. So we're going to talk about two scenarios today. And the first scenario is kind of when you foul with about somewhere between 7 and 10 seconds left. And I think that's a good point to foul. Now, it says online if you foul, the more time you foul with, the more chances you have of losing. And I think that just means there's more chances of your team making a mistake in a pressure situation with the other team going to be all over you and trying to strip the ball and maybe not getting foul calls and offensive rebound. You know, just so many different factors. And then the other scenario we're going to talk about is if you do it with like 3 or 4 seconds left. So it's basically their last chance. So first, let's talk about the pros and the cons on both sides. So first, we're going to start with not fouling. And in my opinion, the pros, the reasons to not foul is you pretty much can't lose, right? If they hit a three, you go to overtime, right? You can't lose in regulation, excuse me. If they hit a three, you go to overtime. I mean, hopefully your team is well-drilled enough that you're not going to foul and they make a three-pointer. Maybe you'll foul by accident and they'll miss it and they'd have to make all three free throws to tie. But it's really hard to lose in regulation, okay? That's a pro. Another pro is you know they need a three-pointer. So you can really guard the three-point line. Like if they want to dribble by you and take the layup, that's fine. And you can keep all your guys out on the perimeter. You can switch everything. You can jump out on the ball if there's a ball screen. And you can just say you're not going to shoot a three as best as you can and make them throw up some crazy wild shot because you know that they have to shoot a three. The cons to not fouling is some of the time, a real percentage of the time, they're going to make the three. And the percentage they're going to make that three depends on how good your defense is, how good their three-point shooters are, the play they run, how they execute, you know, all of these different things. But there is a number that they're going to make the three. Now, if they run a great play and get a wide open three, it might be as high as 50 or 60% that one time or whatever. If you make them take a wild shot, it may be 3% of the time that the wild shot goes in. But there is a percentage of the time that they will make it. And so there is some times where you are going to go to overtime. So that's definitely a con of not fouling. You know, you can play the greatest defense of all time and guys just make shots. And you know, the lower of the level that you're at, the higher percentage I would think you would not foul. Because younger kids, the younger they are, the less likely they are to make a three just because of strength and practice and just being young, you know? But what do little kids practice all the time? What do kids practice? Free throws. So you can put all your guys at the three-point line, make it extremely hard, but as you get older, they become better three, you know, you get to the high school level, they're better three-point shooters. You get to college level, they're better three-point shooters. You get to the NBA, they're better three-point shooters. They're also going to execute plays better the older they are. And at the lower levels, you're more likely to make a mistake while you're trying to do this foul, while you're trying to foul up three. So I think that the higher levels you are, the more you should use this. So if you're coaching a seventh or eighth grade team or a freshman team, I would almost never foul up three. Because it's just so hard. You're probably, you know, even if you're in a high school freshman team or a JV freshman team, the score is probably in the 30s or 40s for the full game. So the odds of them hitting this crazy three with you playing pretty good defense is really low. Whereas you get these guys that play at Duke and North Carolina and Kansas and all these other places, they can make these really hard threes because they're elite athletes, they're elite basketball players, they're NBA players already that are just still in college. And they're going to make it at a higher percentage of the time, and then you're going to go to overtime. So the con, again, is some percentage of the time they will make the shot, and you're going to have to take your chances in overtime. Now, when you talk about fouling, there's definitely some pros to fouling. The pros to fouling is if you have a really good free throw shooting team and you execute it really well, potentially they won't even get a shot. Maybe they'll have to like heave it from half court or from their own, you know, from their own free throw line off a missed free throw rebound. There's the potential that they have almost 0% chance of winning the game if everything goes right. Another pro is they could miss their free throws, right? If you foul the right guy and he misses, it doesn't really matter if how well you execute it. You know, if you can get a rebound, let's say you're the guy misses the first free throw and now they're still down three. And now they have a decision if they're going to miss the second one or make the second one, depending on how much time is left. But even if they decided to make it, you go down, they have to foul you and you could potentially go up four and the game could basically be over. So, you know, another pro is they have to make their free throws. And if you execute it properly, you could try to get the ball out of their best free throw shooter's hands and make, you know, like in the example, a lower percentage free throw shooter take these free throws. Now, there's definitely some cons to fouling. And the major con is you could lose the game in regulation. It's small percentage, but, you know, if there's 3 seconds left and you foul, and they make the first one and then tip the second one back out and bang a three, you lose. And that's a possibility. That will happen some number out of 100 times. And that's a risk you're kind of taking with this because at some point you're going to put them to that desperation level where they have to, they can't just refoul you back. So they're going to have to go for it. And can you get that defensive rebound? Can you defend the three-point line or the two-point line when that happens? Another con is you might miss your free throws. So you foul them with 8 seconds to go. They come down, they make both free throws. You're up one, and you come down and miss a free throw. And maybe it's your best free throw shooter. And now they have a chance to tie or win the game with a 2 or 3. Not just tie and get to overtime. There's also execution errors. They're going to be pressing you as hard as they possibly can. They could steal the inbound. You could get a 5-second call. They could steal. You know, they could just be rough and the refs don't call. The ball comes squirting out. It's off you, or they get to pick up the ball. So you could turn the ball over. Again, there could be a missed box out or a long rebound on a box out, and they get an offensive rebound. And now, again, you could potentially lose the game. And I classify all this kind of stuff as execution errors, because boxing out and getting a defensive rebound is executing the free throw situation. So there's a lot of different things that can go wrong in that scenario too. So there is no foolproof answer. And for each person, you have to make up your own decisions. And when you make those decisions should not be done based on, well, it says online that we win 86% of the time with this way and 88% of the time with this way. No, it doesn't work that way, because there's so many factors that go into it, as in how good of a free throw shooting team are you? How good of a free throw shooting team are they? How good of a three-point shooting team are they? How good of a defensive team are you that you could stop their three-pointer? How strong are you guys with the ball if they press you and they're all over you guys? How's your rebounding on a free throw? Are you a great boxing out team that can get a defensive rebound on a free throw? All of these things have to go into it. So you can't just say, or you shouldn't just say blindly, we're going to do it this way. You got to factor in all the things in the situation. Now, maybe you say, this year with this team, we're probably going to do this the whole time. But every year and you know, with different teams, maybe every game you should reassess those situations. Now, in order for you to be successful with this, you got to practice it. Whatever way you want to do it, and I would highly recommend practicing both ways, because again, there might be a situation when you are playing BYU and they're a great three-point shooting team and you want to foul up three. But now you might play against a big, strong team that doesn't shoot the ball, the three-point shot very well, and they're not great free throw shooters. And so, I mean, they are great free throw shooters, so you don't foul. And you just say, okay, we're going to defend and make some guy who only shoots 28% from three beat us with a three with our hand all over him, which means his percentage is going to be even way lower. So you've got to work on both scenarios, because both scenarios make him come up in a game. You know, you could be playing that team that shoots a very low percentage, and they could be really hot that game. They could have their outlier game. And then what are you going to do? You know, in that scenario, maybe you do foul, even though it's a team you wouldn't normally foul against, but they're shooting the ball so red hot, they're at home, their crowd's going nuts. Maybe you want to take that away from them. So there's a lot of things that go into it, and I highly recommend working on both ways. We definitely worked on it this year. We didn't work on it enough, but it didn't come up in our two games. So we have, you know, hopefully we'll have time to work on it some more. So I now want to talk about the numbers, and the numbers I came up with are what I came up with, and they're probably not exactly right, but I wanted to use an example, and then from that example, you can skew based on how your team is or different percentages and stuff like that. And it's funny, because when I was doing research on this, And there was actually where someone brought it up on a, you know, it wasn't Reddit, but it was like a similar situation where people could comment. And pretty much everyone who commented just said, I think you should do this, I think you should do that, with no data to back it up, you know. Or someone said, well, remember this one time where this happened to this team because they did foul, or this team because they didn't foul. Yeah, but that's one time. We're talking about 100 times or 1,000 times. So if somebody does something one time, we talked about this on a different podcast about outliers. If somebody hits that 2% three, that doesn't mean that the way you did it was wrong. It just means that you got really unlucky and the percentages were really low, but over the long term, it still might have been the right play. So I had to call my buddy Nick. He's a computer, well, I guess genius would be in quotes. You know, I feel like you're a computer genius when you're really young, but then when you become older, then you're just like a guy who's good at computers. You know, like prodigies are only prodigies when they're young, you know. When you're middle-aged, then you're not really a prodigy anymore. But anyway, he's probably the smartest guy I know. He works with computers and coding and all that other nerdy stuff, you know, in his in his back room with his headphones on and his glasses on and writing X's and O's or whatever he does on his computer. I don't really understand it. But anyway, when it comes to math stuff and smart stuff, I called him purely for the numbers. I don't really care about his basketball thoughts. So I wanted to come up with a scenario here. And the scenario I came up with was my team is up three. And there's two different scenarios, by the way. My team is up three. And the other team has the ball. And in one scenario, there's about 12 seconds left. And in the second scenario, there's about 5 seconds left. And both scenarios were up by three. And in both scenarios, the guy we're fouling on their team is a 75% free throw shooter. And the guy that we're going to get the ball to is an 85% free throw shooter. Okay? And the fact that our guy is 85% doesn't play a massive part in this. But it's nice to have because I think that kind of finishes off the should we or shouldn't we discussion. So I'm not going to talk about the numbers with 8 seconds to go or with 12 seconds to go. So basically what happens in the first scenario that I'm going to talk about right now is they have the ball. There's 12 seconds. They have it underneath and they got to bring the ball up. So they bring it up. The guy's dribbling and it takes them 4 seconds and he's still dribbling until we foul. Okay. Now, again, in this scenario, we are a well-drilled team. We practice this, so we're not fouling a guy while he's shooting it or, you know, making a dumb mistake or something like that. Okay? So, if this guy's a 75% free throw shooter, then you can do the simple math. You do 0.75 times 0.75 and you see that he only makes both free throws 56% of the time. So 56% of the time, he's going to miss one of the two free throws. And if we get a defensive rebound, we win the game. Now, that means 44% of the time, he's going to make both. We're going to have to inbound the ball. And we're going to have to get the ball to our 85% free throw shooter, who then has to make two back. So if you look up, if you do on your calculator 0.85 times 0.85, which is the odds of him making 85% free throw shooter twice, it's 72% of the time he's going to make both. And it seems like that's not a super high percentage, but this is, again, I'm going to go off analytics now, which it's funny because I just said you should be on it, but guys who are 70 to 80%, I think under a pressure situation, their percentage goes down. And guys who are above 80 or even especially above 85, I would guess their percentage maintains the same or possibly goes up. Because a guy who's 80 or less, a pressure situation, they know they're not automatic. And so they probably maybe get a little nervous or distracted and they might miss one. And I think a guy who's 85% or higher, he's a guy who probably misses them because he's not focused. But now, in a pressure situation, this guy is going to be ultra focused, and he's probably going to make both free throws. And look, I know that's helping my cause, my argument, but I think that's the case. And maybe they shoot exactly 75% and exactly 85%. I don't know. But that would be my guess. So let's pretend now that we're going to finish the first scenario. So we make both free throws, okay? So we're back up by three, and now there's 5 to 6 seconds left. They threw the ball to half court. They inbound and they called another quick timeout. So they're taking the ball in at half court, and there's about 5 seconds left, and we're back up by three, okay? And this is the one we're going to get into the math on. And the math is going to be hopefully, look, it took me like an hour talking to my buddy, and we hopefully got it to a spot, a way where it's you can understand it through me just talking. So the guy takes a dribble or two, a second and a half comes off the clock, you foul again. The same 75% free throw shooter. But we're going to throw out, let's say a new 75%, because I don't want the fact that he made two already to affect the percentages, okay? So this is a different 75% free throw shooter, okay? And there's 3 seconds left. their coach doesn't think that they'll have time to make both, foul us, and then come down and score again. So this is it. This is their last chance, okay? We've executed it perfectly, and we're up three with 3 seconds to go. So regardless of the outcome of the first free throw, he's going to miss the second free throw on purpose, okay? Now, we'll come back to that later, because if he made the first free throw and then he misses, they have a chance to win the game with a three. If he missed the first free throw and then he misses a second, they have a chance to tie the game with a three, okay? But that's not interesting at this point, okay? We're going to pretend that we didn't even see the first free throw, but all we know now is he is 100% of the time going to miss the second free throw. He's going to throw it at the rim as hard as he can and hope for a wild bounce off, okay? So in this article that I read by Ken Palm when he did his original analysis on fouling while up three, which is also on his site, he said that when a team needs an offensive rebound, they miss on purpose and the ball goes flying wildly around, they get the offensive rebound 40% of the time. Now, I think that's very high, but we're going to go with that number for the sake of this, because we want to give the opponent a higher percentage, because we don't want to say, oh, they have a 10% chance of winning when they actually have a 15. We want to say they have a 5% chance we might want to say that they have a 10% when they really only have a 5%. We want to be on the other side of our estimation, okay? So 40% of the time, they're going to get the offensive rebound. So in this study that Ken Palm did, 608 times he tallied in this basketball season that he looked it up. Like, this is what he does. He goes through like every single game, looks at all these scenarios, and then does the math on it. So in this year that he charted, 608 times did a team miss the free throw on purpose. 98 times of those 68, of those 608, 98 times of those 608 did they tip the ball out or whatever they did and they knocked down a three, okay? Which is 16%. So 16% of the time that they got the offensive rebound, they made the shot, okay? And that's kind of a percentage of like these wild threes that they're going to be taking, because in theory there's, you know, by the time it's tipped out, there's like 2 seconds left, so the guy can maybe has time for one pass or one dribble, and then he's got to heave it up there. And so it went in 16% of the time. So you say, well, they have 16% chance of tying or winning the game, but that's not true, because they're only going to get the offensive rebound 40% of the time. So that 16% that they're going to make is of the 40% of the time that they actually get the offensive rebound. 60% of the time, you're going to get the defensive rebound, the game's over, okay? Now, of the 40%, 16% of the time do they tip it out and make a three. So by doing the math on that, you take 40% times 16%, and you get 6.4%. So 6.4% of the time, they get the offensive rebound and make a three, which is pretty low. Now, let's come back to, did he make or miss the first free throw? So he's a 75% free throw shooter. So 3 out of 4 times, 75 out of 100 times, he's going to make that first free throw. And 25% of the time, he's going to miss that first free throw. So that doesn't change how often they get the offensive rebound. It doesn't change how often they make the three. It just changes the scenario, whether you either tie or lose, right? If he made it, then that 6% of the time that you made it, made the first free throw, you win the game. And if he missed it, that 6% of the time that you made the shot, you tie the game, okay? So that doesn't change anything except for the outcome of the game. It's either you're going to overtime or you lose. So if you do the math on that, where 75% of the time he makes it, that ends up being 4.8%. So 4.8% of the time, if you ran this 100 times, 4.8 times, they make the first one, miss the second, tap it out, hit the three, and you lose. 1.6% of the time, he misses the first one, misses the second one, they tip it out, they get the offensive rebound, tip it out, and they make the three. And that, if you add those two together, that's your 6.4%. So you're talking about a 93%, 93.6% chance of winning the game. So you're seeing a 93.6% chance of winning the game right there, because they either miss the shot or you get the offensive rebound. And some of those times, you'll just go to overtime and you'll have a chance to win the game there. But the big con is that 4.8% of the time, you lose the game. They tip it out, they throw up a miracle three, they make it, and you lose the game. Okay? So now you have to compare that to what happens if you don't foul. So in that scenario, let's say they make the three 20% of the time. And you say, well, you just said 16% of the time. Yes, but that is in a melee off a missed free throw with 2 seconds to go on the clock. This is running a play with potentially 10 or 12 seconds left. I actually think the percentage would be a little bit higher because if they ran a really good play, they might get a wide open three. But we're going to say 20%. So 20% of the time, they make the shot and you end up in overtime. And now let's say the teams are dead even and it's 50-50 in overtime. So if you multiply 20% times 50%, 10% of the time you're going to lose the game in overtime. So in one scenario, you're going to lose the game 6.4% of the time. And the other scenario, you're going to lose the game 10% of the time. And now, that's being very generic here. This is not, I don't want you to coach saying, well, John said 10% of the time we're going to win and 6.4 we're going to win. No, that's not how it is. Like I said at the beginning, it depends on a lot of factors. And one of the biggest factors is the free throw percentage. The lower the free throw percentage is of this team or this player that you foul, the higher percentage of a chance you have if you foul, and vice versa. The lower their three-point percentage, the higher percent chance you win if you don't foul. So these are not hard numbers. This is an example based on, you know, a 75% free throw shooter, which is, you know, for the college level, pretty good, but not crazy. Now, if you could drill this, and we tried doing this with my team in practice, we said, okay, you know, they didn't know we were going to foul. We were just doing end of game scenarios. When you do this, the other team doesn't necessarily know you're going to foul. So you could say, okay, if player X and Y have the ball, we're not fouling. We're going to defend because they're fantastic free throw shooters and we don't want to foul them. But if player, let's say there's 15 seconds on the clock and they're bringing across half court. You say, okay, player X and Y are such good free throw shooters that we don't want to get into a fouling game with these guys. But if their center or their power forward gets it, of course we want to immediately foul because we believe that they're going to miss one of those, maybe both, and now we can win the game easily. So there's a lot of things that factor into this. And the same for the other way, potentially. You could say, this guy is such a knockdown three-point shooter that if he touches the ball, we do want to foul just so we can't shoot the three and tie us up. So there's a lot of things to bring into it. And I think that if executed properly, there's a little bit of an edge to fouling, but it's not huge.